Hi, this is Ken Robinson. Get ready for a great conversation. But remember, every Tuesday, there's a new edition of Audio Antiques from the K-Rob Collection, featuring highlights from the golden age of American radio on many of these same podcast platforms. This is Conversations with Ken. I'm Ken Robinson. Really appreciate you stopping by to listen to our podcast today. You know, we have about 50% of our audience in the United States, but we also want to take time out to acknowledge our many listeners around the world, especially in Germany, Australia, India, the UK, Spain, Ireland, Canada, Russia, and South Africa. Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. We really appreciate you listening wherever you are in the world. And today we're going to be talking about an issue of critical importance to many people around the world. It's suicide. Did you know that it's estimated that 1 million people worldwide die by suicide every year? And that's expected to grow to 1.5 million in the coming years. Globally, suicide ranks as among the three leading causes of death among people ages 15 to 45 years old. We're going to attempt to find out why and how we can change it right after this break.
With our crazy economy, you've got to save money any way you can, and that includes your cell phone bill. Switch over to Mint Mobile and get talk, data, and text for as little as $15 a month. It's so easy. Pick the plan that's best for you, and Mint will send you a SIM card. Insert it into your phone and start saving. You can even keep your old number. Slash your cell phone bill today with Mint Mobile at krobcollection.com.
Back now to Conversations with Ken. On this podcast, we're taking a look at suicide. You know, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and in 2016, about 45,000 cases occurred, and the number of cases seemed to be growing. Ohio University has studied suicide, and they've found some very interesting information, some of it troubling, too. More than 15,000 suicide deaths were reported in Ohio over a 10-year span. We're going to hear from Tracy Plouk, an executive in residence at Ohio University. Why are we looking at Ohio? Well, Ohio tends to mirror much of the United States in many respects. And this new study was done by the Ohio Alliance for Innovation in Population Health. Tracy, thanks for joining us. First of all, tell us about the Alliance.
The Ohio Alliance for Population Health has been in existence for about a year and a half. We have approximately 30 member organizations, including other colleges and universities, some statewide membership organizations, local health departments, community behavioral health providers, hospital systems, et cetera. And basically, we try to come together through the network to bring consultative resources to each other, to help partner for federal grants, and just, you know, work together collaboratively to address challenges that are identified in local communities.
Sure. Now, how did the Alliance come to study suicide?
Well, suicide is a public health issue in Ohio and across the country. And the lead researcher on this particular study is named Orman Hall. And he accessed death files from the Ohio Department of Health. And the goal is to just examine some trends over time and help further a dialogue within communities on some additional interventions that could be considered.
All right. Well, Ohio being sometimes a model for the rest of the nation, I would imagine that many of the findings that you discovered are a wake-up call for the entire country, even though they're specific to Ohio.
Yeah, there are, over a 10-year period, January 2008 to December 2017, there were 15,246 Ohio suicide fatalities.
And that's over a 10-year span.
That's over a 10-year span, and that accounts for 1.3% of all deaths in Ohio during that period.
We often don't hear about those deaths. If that had been to smallpox or auto accidents, we'd be hearing about it all the time, but it seems like the suicide death rate is kind of kept hush-hush.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes the fact that a friend or family member has taken their own life can be somewhat isolating for the family and friends. There is some stigma around, oftentimes circumstances that the person had been experiencing before their untimely death. And I think that there's just, isolation in the entire experience. And so one of the things that we're hoping to do by sharing this information is help to reduce stigma, help to increase folks talking about proactive strategies that can be undertaken to help prevent further deaths.
Absolutely. Now, that's a 24% increase in the number of suicide deaths in Ohio over a decade. That's astounding.
That's correct. Yeah, and on a per capita basis, the highest penetration of suicide deaths were in the Appalachian counties throughout the period. We also know that men were far more likely to die by suicide than women. Also, individuals who are aged 50 and over had a higher penetration of deaths relative to other age groups.
Even though you did see a huge jump in suicides among ages 20 to 29.
Yeah, I think that there are a number of warning signs that we should discuss here. To the extent that individuals are discussing suicide, that they might be displaying signs of hopelessness. They talk about not having any reason to live. I mean, absolutely, it's incumbent upon all of us to try to let someone know so that the person can, be intervened with in an appropriate way.
Any idea why so many suicides in Appalachia, rural counties, where is life harder, more difficult there, or is it poverty? Are any of those related?
Well, we know that in general there are risk factors that are associated with suicide. The presence of a single risk factor or a couple of risk factors, in a person's life obviously does not indicate, definite correlation or anything. I want to be clear about that. But if an individual has a history of mental health disorders, if they've got serious chronic health conditions that are of concern to them, if there's a family history of suicide, that's another risk factor. Individuals with histories of trauma in their backgrounds may be at higher risk of suicide. If somebody's had a stressful transition in their life, maybe they've lost a job or they're living in poverty, they've lost a loved one, that's another risk factor. And then also access to lethal means is a risk factor.
I also noticed in the Alliance's study that Caucasians were more have a higher suicide rate than African Americans. We usually think of Caucasians as being more well off and having fewer economic and social issues.
But if you think about the risk factors that I just mentioned, can be prevalence of trauma and poverty and access to lethal means, that really could transcend any demographic, group. And Ohio does have a greater percentage of Caucasians relative to minority populations. So that wasn't really surprising, I think, a fact of the study, at least for me personally.
Mm-hmm. I guess one thing not so surprising is that firearms accounted for the majority of suicide fatalities during the study period. I guess that's just, that's basically kind of historical, I would imagine, because it's an easy way to do that.
Yeah, firearms are a much more potent approach if someone is certainly considering lethal means. That's why it's very important that if someone is exhibiting risk factors, to make sure that access to means, whatever they might be, are mitigated to the extent possible.
Any look or examination of the opioid crisis, is that fitting into the suicide rate, or just drug usage, illegal drug usage overall, is that contributing to the high suicide rate?
Well, that's an interesting question. There was not any sort of cross-tabulation on cause of death. Obviously, the numbers that the Ohio Department of Health releases every year related to unintentional overdose deaths are indeed unintentional. So if an individual overdosed on pills and let's say they left a suicide note, that would be counted as a suicide rather than an unintentional overdose drug death. This study did not include any analysis of people's drug use, you know, illicit or prescribed as a part of the analysis.
Okay. Well, when the study was tabulated and all the data was in and you looked at these numbers, what was your first thought? I mean, it's like, wow, this is a crisis.
Yeah, 15,000 individuals over 10 years. I grew up in northeastern Ohio in a town that had fewer than 5,000 people, and that's three times the number of people in my hometown dying for, you know, completely avoidable reasons. And I think about the ripple effects through families and, you know, friendships and everything that occurs as a result of the loss of human life. And I think that's really the most troubling thing to me. I mean, those are 15,000 Ohioans who could yet be alive today.
Absolutely. You know, we often think of this being like a renaissance age. I mean, we have the best technology. The economy is doing very well. We have a more inclusive society, more people being able to take part in society. It looks like there are a lot of things going our way, but yet we see this high suicide rate.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of innovations in Ohio's communities. And on a statewide basis, there is the Be Present campaign, which focuses on young people and how it's important for them to be present in the lives of their friends and their fellow students. It's a suicide prevention campaign that never mentions the word suicide. There are many county-level initiatives. Some counties are promoting specific kinds of training for primary care professionals or for different audiences within the county that can help to raise awareness about suicide. Summit County, I believe, has a loss team, which is sort of a quick response team for families that experience suicide so that they can be connected with resources, be connected with peer families, if you will, you know, individuals who have experienced a similar loss and can help provide hope through that really dark time for them. There's a toolkit that's been developed for primary care providers because we know that many people who complete suicide actually see their primary care doctor within, you know, just a couple months of their passing. And there's also the crisis text line. You can text 4HELP to 741741. That has been widely diffused in Ohio in the last few years. And, of course, there's the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is 1-800-273-TALK. And that is, you know, manned 24/7. And there are a number of participating helplines in Ohio that support that network.
Mm-hmm. Well, who do we need to reach? Who do we need to touch to prevent these deaths from happening?
Well, in my opinion, every member of our society has a role in helping to prevent the suicides from occurring. If you see that someone may be depressed, loses interest, you know, has behavior changes that are notable really on any front, if they're discussing hopelessness, if they've just gone through a really hard time, you know, reach out to them and just be direct and ask if you're experiencing a challenge and if you're thinking about harming yourself. And if so, do you have access to lethal means? And to reach out, whether it's to first responders, to primary care, to friends or family, I mean, make sure that someone can assist you to connect that person with services that would be helpful.
Well, sometimes people are apprehensive, you know, to get involved. They don't want to recognize the symptoms or the danger signs, or they, you know, they just don't want to deal with it. How do you get them to step up?
Well, I volunteered on my local helpline for 10 years, and I know that people would call and describe exactly the circumstance that you just did. And depending on the situation, we could give them suggestions of who to call if they didn't feel that they directly wanted to, talk with that person. So in some cases, you know, it might be a healthcare professional. It might be law enforcement, depending on, you know, the circumstances. And so there are trained individuals within each community that can help troubleshoot specific situations. If somebody, you know, seems to be exhibiting a lot of risk factors and the person who's concerned doesn't know how to reach them.
Sure. And again, what's the demographic most at risk?
The data of the last 10 years suggests that it is middle age to older white men. That's where we've seen, you know, the largest volume of individuals who've completed suicide. But young people are at risk. There's suicide rates, as you said, were highest among Caucasians. But, I think suicide rates, people 50 and, 50 years and above are the highest.
When you see those warning signs, it's not enough to just tell the person to cheer up and that things aren't that bad, which is usually the first reaction people have.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important to understand whether they, if they are considering self-harm, if they have access to lethal means immediately. So do they have access to firearms? Do they have access to pills that they could use to overdose? Any, you know, any sort of factor that is imminent, you know, that's important to understand. And then you can kind of go from there as far as what the safety plan is going to be. Obviously, if depression is a factor, clinical counseling, you know, medications may be helpful. If the person has experienced trauma or is struggling with an addiction, I mean, addressing the roots of those circumstances would be a part of, the safety planning and the long-term recovery for the individual.
And they shouldn't be afraid to get help.
No. I mean, the prevalence of people who are struggling in our society, whether it's related to a mental health challenge at the time or whether it's related to a stressful life event, I mean, there are people in all walks of life who are experiencing challenging times. And I think as a society, we need to be open to show that in some way we care and we want to try to help people, you know, really get through difficult times.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what should the media do? A lot of times the media acts like there is no suicide problem and that suicide doesn't even really exist.
Yeah, that's a great question. The Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services worked with several organizations a few years back to create media guidelines around reporting suicide. And in general, at the end of every story or news segment that relates to suicide, having resource information printed is really helpful. So the crisis text line, the National Suicide Prevention Line, local resources that are relevant, that's really important. Number two, it's important to not focus on any kind of sensationalizing factors, whether it's, you know, talking in detail of how the suicide occurred or, sort of in any way celebrating the fact that this happened or sensationalizing it. I think it's also important to be clear about the stigma related to suicide and make sure that people understand that it's okay to reach out for help. You're not alone. Many people go through challenging times and, you know, there are individuals who are poised to assist you. It's a really important issue. And I think, I mean, one death is too many. So we've got a lot of work to do.
All right. Tracy Plouk, an executive in residence at Ohio University. And she's also with the Ohio Alliance for Innovation and Population Health. They completed a study that shows suicide rates rising over a 10-year span in the state of Ohio. Next, we're going to hear from a woman who actually attempted suicide, and now she's dedicated her life to helping others, and she's using yoga to help people fight off suicidal thoughts. That's coming up right after this break. Stock market traders need the right financial visualizations to be successful. And that's what FinViz Elite is all about. FinViz Elite provides real-time market data, research, screeners, ratings, and technical indicators backed by 24 years of historical statistics, all presented in an advertising-free interface at a price everyone can afford. Get details about FinViz Elite at krobcollection.com. Our transition music is by H-Beats, who can improve the quality of any presentation. That's H-Beats with a Z at the end. See how H-Beats can improve your presentation with a quality musical soundtrack. Contact hbeats330@gmail.com. Our conversation about suicide continues on this edition of Conversations with Ken. I'm Ken Robinson. Now we're going to turn our attention to Michelle Starr. She's a 72-year-old woman who many years ago attempted suicide. She failed, but that was like an awakening for her, and she found a way to defeat suicidal thoughts by the use of yoga. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
First of all, do you teach yoga at a certain place, or do you have a studio?
I teach in different places. I did have my own studio, but I was already past 65 and they wanted another five-year lease, and I said, no. So I do have a home studio where I offer small classes, and but I teach at many different places.
Okay. Well, you have a book out. What is the name of the book?
Well, the title is, and I'll give you the subtitle as well because it helps to explain. It is "I Forgive You, Daddy: Yoga and the Angels Healed Me."
That's so a pretty long title there.
It is long, but it's such. I felt it was important so people could get an idea of. It's not just about abuse. It's about spirituality and solutions to challenges from the spiritual side.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll start at the beginning. In 1970, you had a failed suicide attempt. Tell us what happened there.
Well, I grew up in an alcoholic family dynamic, and there was a lot of abuse from the whole family. It was just a mess. It was so violent and sexual abuse, spiritual abuse, emotional abuse, and I was just, I was at my wit's end. I couldn't cope, and I took a whole handful of, it was called Librium, and nothing happened. I didn't get sleepy. I didn't pass out. I didn't die, obviously, and I actually heard a voice in the room, like up by the ceiling, saying, you know, when I discovered, oh my gosh, I'm still alive, and nothing has happened, I heard this booming voice, okay, Michelle, now you have to clean up your life. It's like, well, what the heck does that mean? I was 23, and was just an emotional wreck, and lo and behold, that's when yoga found me. I was taking dance classes in Elyria, and there was a yoga teacher that taught in that dance studio. And my teachers kept saying, come with us, come with us. It's like, well, what's yoga, you know? So my first class was it that I knew, and I just stayed with it since 1970. And it's been a very healing journey.
Can I ask what the tipping point was that made you consider suicide?
Well, I had been on the Librium for a little while. I don't remember how long, months probably, for depression and just emotional challenges. And I just got to the point where I can't take these pills anymore. I don't know what they do for me. I didn't understand what they were or why I was taking them. So I stopped cold turkey. And it was downhill from there. I just reached a point where I couldn't bear life anymore. I just wanted to die. I wanted out.
So again, how did you attempt to take your life?
Yes, it was a handful of these Librium capsules. This it wasn't an antidepressant. I forget. It's just a psychotic drug. I took a handful of those, and whether I didn't, maybe there was one pill too few or what, I don't know, but nothing happened. There was no effect. And, you know, I should have been sleepy or something, some response. But it just wasn't my time, and I was meant to stay here and overcome all this challenge. And that's what I did. I studied yoga. I studied some astrology, and I'm very visual, and I had, if it's okay to say, past life recall. It would come to me in meditation. I would see, but I also see Jesus in my meditations, you know, and angels. So I'm an unusual bird, but I'm here to help others. I'm here to, you know, I overcame all of that, and now I'm here to help others. But it's hard to get the word out about this kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, you know, so many people are especially today,
mm-hmm.
they're dealing with, you know, family issues, alcohol, mm-hmm. drugs, abuse,
yeah.
And that's caused the suicide rate to skyrocket.
Yes.
But I bet you have insight into those dynamics, the pressures people feel, the hurt, the guilt, the shame that goes
yeah.
on. What do you tell people going through that right now?
The practice of yoga and meditation, relaxation, and finding something that a person likes. I went to a counselor briefly, and he said, go get interested in something that you like. So that's when I started dance. And I feel that was guidance speaking, and when I started dance, I earned a scholarship for 6 months for free classes, and then the yoga teacher was in that studio a couple nights a week, and I just started healing. I felt like I came home. So if people can find something that they like, whether it's nature or I tried religion, and that didn't work for me because I was even abused by the head deacon of our church. And so, you know, I turned away from that. But yoga, it takes you inward to relax around these issues and to let them go, to make peace with them, to forgive yourself. It just works.
I've heard of yoga being used to help prisoners overcome,
yeah.
What has put them in prison. And I've heard it being used for a lot of issues like that, whether it be dealing with crime or drug abuse. For those who aren't familiar with yoga, what exactly is it, and how do you use it to bring positivity to your life?
Well, there are what are called asanas or physical exercises, and they are scientifically designed, and they've been around for thousands of years, to stimulate the energy centers in the body. The energy centers, they're called chakras, are what get clogged up with these emotional issues. And if they get clogged up, they close down and illness ensues, whether it's mental, emotional issues, or physical. It can be both or either. But the physical exercises help to clear that. And then there's a relaxation at the end of every class where you reconnect with your inner self, your whole self, your higher self, your the wholeness within you. Everybody has a peaceful center. We just clog it up with all this stuff that's going on, and we think that's real and that that's us, but we are not our emotions, we are not our thoughts, and we learn that. And just being in a class with me, as long as I've done yoga, my energy helps people to heal because I'm connected to the source and I bring that through, and that helps people to heal. So there are other teachers that have gone through abuse and they've healed with yoga. So, you know, I'm not the only one, but I don't know anybody personally. But if people can get themselves into yoga class and be consistent, that's the key, is being consistent with it and meditating, whether it's 5 minutes, 3 minutes, but regularly, and doing the yoga asanas, then it really works.
Is it hard to learn?
It depends on the person and the teacher. You need to find a teacher that you're compatible with personality-wise, and usually a teacher will let you interview them and talk, you know, just to see where you're at, and, you know, how the teacher might help. And then they can go from there. And the poses might seem hard, but a person only goes where their body is able to go, and then it opens. The stretching, the deep breathing, the meditation, that all opens the body and releases those tensions from deep within.
So it's not only mental exercise, it's a physical exercise as well.
It is. It's a holistic approach, seriously. Mind, body, spirit. You'll hear that whenever anybody talks about yoga, oh yeah, it's mind, body, spirit. Well, it is, truly.
Would you say that yoga saved your life?
Yes, and the angels, because in my book I explain the angels came and worked with me. And it explains just exactly how that happened, but it's because this is what I was meant to do, to go through all of this challenge and abuse and then heal it and then help people in the world today that are having these same challenges. Because the world is, I mean, there are a lot of wonderful people, but the world is kind of chaotic and a lot of violence. And what's happening is there's a lot of big cleansing going on. So our subconscious stuff comes up, has to be looked at, released, and then we're clear. And the more you do, the more clear you get, and the more peaceful you become. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I'm pretty sure you outline it all in your book.
Yeah.
And it's available on Amazon?
It is.
And the name of it, once again?
The name of it is I Forgive You, Daddy, Yoga and the Angels Healed Me. And then there's the subtitle. But I self-published it through CreateSpace, which is a division of Amazon. And I can give you the website where people can look at the description if they want to.
Sure.
It's www.createspace, and that's one word, .com/499-1332.
Okay. And can they also go to michellestaryoga.com?
They can go there. I don't sell the book on there. The website is listed, so people can just go to the website and get it directly, or they can go directly to Amazon or Kindle. It's available on Kindle as well.
Now, when people get the book, do you think, is it possible to learn yoga by without going through a teacher and just reading about it and studying about it, or do you recommend having a teacher?
You need a teacher, for sure. Now, having said that, there are people that are pretty highly evolved, and they can tune in reading a book. There are a few that can do that. But for people like me that went through pretty much dark, it was a dark childhood, and I mean, the abuse started when I was a year old. My father was abusing me. So I didn't even have the memory until I was 50. Because in doing the yoga, you develop a vessel, a way to build strength within you, and then you can face that kind of darkness. But, you know, there are a lot of people going through darkness, but not a lot are going through that much. And that's not to minimize anybody's challenges, but there was a lot, and I was a sensitive child. I mean, I'm psychically sensitive. So I really recommend having a teacher, because when these things come up, people have a place that's safe to go. Yoga class is safe to experience feelings that may have been suppressed or repressed, and to face these dark shadows that have built up within us through these dark experiences. So I think it's best to have a teacher. And if somebody goes to class and then, oh, I can do this myself, okay, try it. But I really recommend, especially with people who've been through a lot, addiction, pain, physical abuse or sexual abuse. They might even want to have a counselor and yoga. And a lot of counselors now are getting certified in yoga. I have a great niece that is a social worker, and she's going for her PhD in mind-body health. She may even get certified, but in yoga, that is. So it's recognized. And even physical therapists and occupational therapists, I used to travel like 5 states teaching them how to take yoga back to their clinics. And now it's in their charter that yoga is a part of their training.
Wow. So I guess the message is, if anybody dealing, you know, with mm-hmm. suicidal thoughts or suicidal issues or abuse, that they should look at this as as a way forward, and that they should give it a try, and that there's always a way out. There's always light at the end of the tunnel that they can turn to if they just search for it.
Yeah. I did the classes at the Cleveland Clinic. They did a scientific study on yoga and chronic pain for people that had chronic pain, and the results were phenomenal. So most pain is caused from some emotional repression. Physical pain, is caused from ignoring feelings or not getting feelings or needs met, like the love that a person needs. And they'll get so busy they just ignore all of that, and you can't do it, not to stay happy.
All right. Thank you very much for the information and the interview. Michelle Starr, a 72-year-old yoga instructor. She's been practicing yoga for 50 years. She's worked over a 5-state region in the United States. And she says yoga can put one on the path toward healing, especially when it comes to thoughts of suicide. And that's our podcast for today. Hey, tell your friends about our show. Also, consider subscribing to our podcast channel, The Ken Robinson Shows.